Committee on Energy to order at 5:13. Today is August 26, 2009. We're very pleased to be here in Unalaska. I checked with the mayor and a couple of others, and to the best of anyone's memory, we think this is the first official legislative hearing wherein in the community where we actually have the meeting transcribed, and the content of the meeting will become part of the official record. So if it isn't, somebody will maybe advise us as such as the evening goes on. But it's, again, very much our pleasure to be here today. We the meeting will go from essentially 5 to 7 p.m. This evening. And as we do in Juneau, we'll ask you all to turn your cell phones off. And the practice in Juneau is if the cell phone goes off, that somebody buys a whole room donuts. But we won't worry about that down here. We have a number of bills that are over at the sign-up table that we ask for your comments on. House Bill 218 and House Bill 219, that those are two bills that pertain to the establishment of creating a Department of Energy, and also one that pertains to the Renewable Energy Fund. And also we have a draft bill that a number of people in Anchorage have been meeting together, along with myself and co-chair Millett, a working group, as we call ourselves, to begin the first, begin laying out the foundation for a statewide energy plan that we hope to have refined to a point where we can actually introduce a bill next session and consider that. But again, this will be an official legislative meeting, so we'll ask those that come forward to testify to identify themselves for the record, state their affiliations. We'll do our best to accommodate everybody. We'll start with the mayor first, and when time provides, we will we may have to restrict testifiers if we get to a point where 7 o'clock is nearing and we're running out of time. And with that, what I'd like to do is just have the members who are here today introduce themselves briefly, if they would, maybe mention their legislative districts, where they're from, and any other sort of quick pertinent comments. And with that, it's my pleasure to introduce or have the Speaker of the House to start up, if you would mind, please.
Good morning or afternoon, I guess it is. For those that don't know me, I'm Mike Chenault. I represent District 34 on the Kenai Peninsula, and I think this is about my fourth trip here over probably the last 10 years. I'm glad to be here, and just want to listen to what the community members have to say about your energy needs and solutions so that maybe we can help this area out. So with that, thanks for having me here.
And my name is Representative Chris Tuck. I'm from South Central Anchorage, District 29, also known as the Diamond Business District. Thanks for having us here today. I really look forward to coming. This is one of the trips, you know, getting down in Aleutian that I kind of wanted to get out and visit. This is a good opportunity. But, yeah, thanks for having us.
Kyle, did you want to go next? Then I'll have Representative Ramos follow Representative Johansson, and co-chair Millett, if you want to offer some comments while you introduce yourself, that'd be great too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Kyle Johansson from District 1, which is Ketchikan and part of Prince of Wales. First time here, and look forward to hearing what you have to say. Thank you.
Representative Ramos, if you can hear us, do you want to introduce yourself briefly as well, please?
I can hear you very well, Mr. Chairman, and thank you very much for having me. I'm sorry I can't be there in person. I'm from Fairbanks, and we certainly understand, have a lot of empathy for the folks out there trying to manage their utility costs.
Thank you, Jay.
And I'm Sharice Millett. I co-chair the House Energy Committee with Representative Edgman. I represent Lower Hillside and Anchorage. It's House District 30. I'm a freshman legislator, and I'm very happy to be here. I spent some time here. I worked for, I'm going to date myself, but I worked for Revolution Airways for 14 years, flying out here in the early 80s to the mid-90s. So it's really nice to see here. I'm excited to see the growth that's happened in your area since the last time I was here.
With that, before we start the meeting, we would like to say that Representative Peterson and Representative Dahlstrom, the two other members on the committee, could make the meeting, but they asked to convey their apologies for not being able to make it. They originally had intended to make it. Just very briefly, a quick recap before we get into public testimony. Thanks to the speaker for allowing the committee, but the last several months we have made a concerted effort to sort of crisscross the state, traveling to a lot of rural areas, believe it or not, actually going out to Nome and Kotzebue, Noatak, Dillingham during the session, which is pretty unprecedented to take a legislative committee out of Juneau and have hearings while the session's in progress. We've also been out to Bethel. We've been to Fairbanks. We plan to go to Haines next month, and I believe there'll be a hearing in Anchorage on the 1st of September and possibly some other hearings as well before the fall is over and the start of session begins in January. And as part of that, we are here in Onalaska. And for those who may be listening, we do have a toll-free number, and we're going to limit the incoming calls, if there are any, and we sure hope there are, to those that are from the area, from the Aleutians, if you will, and certainly if there's anybody in the Alaska Peninsula area that will call in as well. The toll-free number is 1-888-299-5-4546. And with that, unless there are any comments from committee members, it'd be our pleasure to call Mayor Marquardt to the table. Surely, if you wanted to be the first to testify, we would like to hear from you.
Thank you very much. First of all, I certainly want to thank you, Representative Benjamin, for bringing the committee all the way out here to Onalaska. We know that you could have held this meeting anywhere in the state, and this is takes a lot of time to fly out here, and it's fairly cost expensive as well, so we really appreciate your interest in this region. Sometimes we kind of feel like, you know, we're so far removed from the rest of the state that people don't really understand us or why we're out here or what we're doing. So when we can get a committee like this out to listen to our concerns and our ideas, it means a lot to us and we appreciate it greatly. I think that you're going to hear tonight probably what you've heard a lot all over the state. You acknowledge and appreciate the fact that the cost to provide energy in communities in rural Alaska is extremely high and that there are not a whole lot of good solutions and answers out there, simply because in terms of transportation to get fuel to some of the areas, the high costs of construction, if somebody wants to provide new or upgrade existing power facilities, the extremely high cost to construct them takes away any savings that they may have been able to pass on to their customers without some help. My hope for the state energy plan, and I've just briefly looked at it on the table for the first time, but I understand that that there's a real desire to try and get as much as possible. I've read 50% of power production in the state on renewable resources by 2025, but there's a big part of me that says that's probably not possible. That's not a bad goal to shoot for, but at the same time, I hope that the policy acknowledges that there are existing facilities throughout the state that could be upgraded with newer technologies that are still using diesel, whether it's going to be for their base load or for backup, whatever the reason that it is. If a community has the ability to get some funding to help keep those high costs of construction down, and they can provide newer technology that might burn 30% less fuel for their utility, that's a lot of fuel. They can pass those savings on then to their customers if they haven't had to pay the whole cost of the construction. So in terms of grants through AEA or through a new department, if that's the direction that the legislature decides to go, I would hope that there is still there's local control and there's local input on all of these projects. And there are times where we have seen monies from the state, if they're given directly to a municipality or to a community to use for a project that has been analyzed and, you know, it's been found to be financially feasible and workable, to give it directly to them and let them do the project saves quite a lot of money and quite a lot of time and quite a lot of heartache. So, you know, I think a real big part of any energy policy is to make sure that the communities have control and input over how their communities are affected by whatever the energy policy is for the state. I would encourage also on the one bill for 219. Pardon me. The discussion of hiring an economist with experience in the area of renewable energy. My only comment there would be there are so many economists out there that have, there's always one word in front of them. A forensic economist is an economist who will come in and basically shred any of the information before them to come out with a product that suits their client. And that would be my concern, that if the state's the client, that they would want to have independent economists or financial engineers, folks with a background, and not just renewable energy because it's still so new, and there's not a lot of it that's actually in the ground and working. There's a lot of ideas out there, but there's a lot of engineers and of economists that have backgrounds in power production itself and financial feasibility of different projects. So I would encourage you to look in that direction in terms of economists and to also really really look at the creation of a new department for energy, that department somehow doesn't step in to become the only grantor of money for projects for communities like the city of Unalaska with our new power project. You know, we would rather go to the legislature, to our legislators who understand our community and who know what we're trying to do, and we can explain the situation, the challenges that we have, and how we're meeting those, and ask for help on construction costs so we can keep the cost down without trying to go through a grant program, which might be more difficult for somebody who's simply trying to upgrade existing diesel if the grant is they're really trying to look at renewables. We've got some challenges with renewables in Unalaska. We've got wind, just a darn lot of it, and it comes from every direction at the same time. And it's problematic for us. Tides in Dillingham are, 25, 30 feet. Here they're 2.5, 3 feet. We do have, putting something in the current to direct, like out at Unimac Pass, that's 27 miles away, underwater cable. So the costs there are huge, and the risks are really large for us because we're not on a grid. We have to take care of ourselves. So the concern for me would be communities like us would have a very difficult time getting grant funding for a project that wasn't, a nice, shiny, new, renewable project, when we're, in fact, doing something that will reduce our carbon footprint, that will reduce our dependency on fuels, which will bring down costs for our consumers. So just keep in mind all the differences, that every community is so different in this state, and that's my concern is that another department might not see that as well as you as a body of legislators. So with that, I will close. And again, I just want to thank you for coming out here. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you very much, Mayor. And any questions or comments from committee members before you leave? And if not, I just wanted to point out that you brought up a really interesting point, and that is the capital budget process and how a local government, a community can work really hard through all of the channels, taking an idea, bringing it up through the ranks of state government, and certainly going back east on the federal end of things, and a lot of time capital dollars flow from the federal government through the state government via the state capital budget, but that it not be constrained by sort of sideboards, if you will, or requirements in this new Department of Energy should it come about. And I think that's something that I hadn't heard before, and I appreciate you bringing that forward. I think that's a really astute point.
Okay. It's been our experience, too.
Representative Millett.
I don't know if folks out in this area understand that the Governor Parnell just did appoint energy cabinet level energy position. So that's something that we had
proposed in the Department of Energy bill and House Bill 218. So part of that is already taking place. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the legislation was the catalyst for that, or just the from around the state hearing the cries for help, and the governor did listen and appoint Gene Curio as a cabinet level position for, I don't think he's like the commissioner of energy yet, but I think that the recognition of the energy is a huge issue all over our state. So I was really happy to see that.
Well, thank you very much.
With that, Mayor Marquardt, thank you for coming forward, and really appreciate the opening remarks and certainly the hospitality and the invitation to come down here, and we're all very happy that we could make it down on time, as it were. And with that, I would like to, I'm not going to work off the list here just for a moment, but I want to make sure that we get folks such as the superintendent. John, if you wanted to come up and offer a few comments, I have your name on the list here. You hadn't planned on it?
No.
Well, here's your one opportunity to speak in front of the Energy Committee, and if you hadn't planned on it, we won't twist your arm.
I can tell you a little bit about our debt reimbursement project at the school that...
Maybe I can get you to identify yourself and your affiliation for the record.
My name is John Conwell, superintendent with Unalaska City School District. And we've nearly completed a large renovation project at our main facility, our 5th through 12th grade school, and much of the renovations involved energy efficiencies with all interior and exterior lights, which we hope to see some huge cost savings with our utilities, replaced all exterior doors and windows with energy efficient units, re-roofed about half the roof, fixed a large section of our exterior that was leaking and the wind was blowing through the cracks, and then also some large renovations in our kitchen. So we're hoping that in about 6 months we're able to report to you and to the city officials that we are seeing much lower utility bills, and would encourage the legislature to continue the 70% debt reimbursement programs for school districts. It's been a great program for us and has enabled us to provide a much better learning environment for our great students here in Unalaska. Thank you, Representative Benjamin.
Thank you, John, for coming forward and not seeing or hearing any comments or questions from committee members. I do understand that we have another mayor in the audience, the mayor of Accutan. Joe, did you want to... You want to come forward and offer a few comments? I know you've said no on the sign-up sheet, but we'll twist your arms since you're a mayor and also a Lucian's East Borough Assembly member, if I'm not mistaken.
Thanks a lot, Brian. I am Joe Breckin, the mayor of the city of Acton. I do appreciate the mayor's Alaska's comments. I think she brings up some interesting points about what's going on. I was just reading your bill at 218, and I get nervous when you're trying to combine all the departments and how that's going to work. I think you need to be very careful, I think, in how you structure that. Something's going to drop out, I'm afraid, that's how it goes. City of Acton has been very fortunate of getting three energy projects funded by the state through AEA, through the existing program, and I think a lot of people wonder how Acton, such a small community, could tap into those types of funds. And I think some of the other communities need to, I guess, understand the process. And that was, if you get a good group together to promote your projects, I think it'll work out great. And we are going to benefit from the funding at the plan that the state did put together. So. Do appreciate the effort that the state is putting forward with Palin before she left. We were able to get in on the second round, and one was a geothermal, and the other two were two hydro projects that we're currently going to try to, one is to upgrade, and others just to do some feasibility study on possibility of more hydro. But again, I appreciate you guys coming out here. I really wasn't that involved in what you guys were doing here, and these host bills that are out there, I find them quite interesting. I think now I'm going to start looking at them and see what they're trying to do.
Comments or questions from committee members? I have one, Joe, and that can you give us a quick sort of status update of the geothermal project in Accutan?
We went through two phases for one, actually. We did some soil sampling and some gas sampling a couple of months ago. Currently, there's a group, Western GECO, that just went to Acton here today, actually. They're going to do some electronical stuff there, trying to pinpoint where the best place to drill. And this is the second of three or four that we have to go through before we actually drill. We're hoping to get the drill this fall, but that's probably not going to happen. We're probably going to look at that next spring. We're talking to the same people that are working over here in Unalaska. There's a drill rig that's supposed to be out here that we're slowly talking to and trying to coordinate that with the city of Unalaska. We haven't talked to Unalaska about that, but we did talk to the driller that was assigned out here. We filled out a couple of federal grants to do the drilling. That's going to be the biggest cost, I think, for this project we got over there. So we filled out, tried to tap into the federal energy money that is out there, and we wouldn't know until later this year before we, if we know we got approved for that or not. So we're looking at other resources to start the drilling process, which is, of course, the next thing in line. But we're slowly getting pinpointing where we need to drill and hopefully have a good natural resource to tap into.
Okay, well, great. Well, thanks for coming forward, Joe, and offering those comments. And a little bit out of order, we probably should have done this at the beginning of the meeting, but speaking of the Renewable Energy Fund and the source of some of the grant monies for the projects in Accutan, Co-Chair Millett, maybe if you want to take a moment, just sort of talk about these the legislation that we have at the table.
Right. Well, we noticed two bills, which I think there's copies and a sectional analysis over. Now, the first one is a House Bill 218, creating the Department of Energy. And when we first started our travels around the state, we went up north to Kotzebue and to Noatak and to Nome. And one of the things that resonated and has resonated in our committee meetings in Juneau prior to traveling was that we didn't have a Department of Energy. We had a lot of energy scattered throughout different departments. We had Alaska Housing and Finance Corporation was the entity that accepted our energy money on behalf of federal monies, the energy money that we get every year from the about $250,000 to $400,000 a year that we get from the state energy program, or the federal energy money that we're receiving currently. It went to Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The weatherization program was housed there. And then under AEA, we had our bridge loans. Under public assistance, we have our LIHEAP. So what we heard a lot was that everything was scattered throughout departments, and people found that they didn't know who to call, what department to call, whether they call public assistance, whether they call ADA, whether they call AEA, whether they call Alaska Housing and Finance Corporation. So the bill was designed as a very beginning of a starting point of what a Department of Energy would look like. We'd have conservation, weatherization programs underneath the Department of Energy. We'd have a cabinet-level position, which we've seen come to fruition at this point. And now the coordination, if you will, the coordination of benefits from the state of Alaska, a one-stop shop was the idea underneath the Department of Energy. We did some initial things that we thought should be under the Department of Energy. We talked about moving AEA and getting its own board. Currently, AEA has the same board of directors that ADA has. They have one board, two different missions, so it seemed a little disconnected. So we moved AEA under the Department of Energy with its own board. We also moved ANGA, which is the voter initiative that created the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority. We moved that group under the Department of Energy. And then there's other things that we have seen, the weatherization program that's under AHFC, we would move under the Department of Energy. And what we heard and what we want to hear from you is that something that people have problems with? Is our energy so scattered throughout the 14, 15 different departments that the state has that you don't know who to call? And that was the genesis of House Bill 218. House Bill 219 is a cleanup bill. The session prior to the session that we were in, we had House Bill 152, which was the Renewable Energy Fund, which is granted $100 million from the legislature appropriation for renewable energy projects. We had an overwhelming applicant applications for the process. We awarded 77 projects, that $100 million that we appropriated, I think $25 million this last session, with an understanding that we would appropriate another $25 million the years going forward. We had a lot of discussion in the legislature prior to me being there, and then this session when the money actually was appropriated and handed out. Some folks in the legislature felt like there wasn't enough oversight. There was some research and development projects, new technologies that weren't proven that legislators had a problem with. So the LBNA committee commissioned our legislature's auditor, to come in and look at the bill and offer some recommendations. And this bill is taking her recommendations and changing, so there's some sideboards. And one of the things that she had said was that project completion wasn't held at a high enough level. So the projects that we awarded the money to, there wasn't an economist looking at what the timeline was, what the capital cost would be, and so that we added that language into the bill. And so that's the genesis of 219, just getting the sideboards on so there's enough strength in that money that we grant to entities that the project will be complete and it will actually have an effect on your energy costs, lowering it, stabilizing it in the project. We won't have 77 projects around the state. They're unfinished. And then the last one is one that we didn't notice because it doesn't have a bill number, but it's the first draft of our energy policy. I think Bryce mentioned that we have a stakeholders group that's met four times now. There's 15 different people from around the state that are sitting down at the table. I've never written an energy plan. I'm not an energy expert, but I know how to find all those people, and we have them all around the state of Alaska. We have an immense resource of folks that know how to do this stuff, so we ask them if they'd sit around a table in an informal setting and just hash out what they would like to see in a state energy policy and an energy plan. And this is our first work product, and it's a work in progress, and that's the other bill that we'd like to hear from you on what you'd like to see in the state energy plan and energy policy.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Millett. And realizing that some of this is probably coming to you without really giving you an opportunity to look at it beforehand, especially the draft legislation, we'll be very pleased to take any written comments, written testimony, if you wanted to elaborate further and get a chance to take a closer look at the bills, and certainly to call any of us up. We're going to be spending a couple of days here in the community, and if the weather holds, as they say tomorrow, maybe even longer than that, but we'll get a chance to talk more about these bills, hopefully one-on-one as well. And with that, let's continue moving down the list of testifiers, and I would next ask Wendy Hawthorne. Wendy, do you want to come the table testify? I don't see a yes or no, so I'm going to take that as a yes.
Well, I wasn't planning on it, but that's okay. My name is Wendy Hawthorne. I am the Chief Executive Officer of the Unalashka Corporation, which is the ANCSA Native Village Corporation for the Village of Unalashka. We represent about 420 shareholders. That has grown from the 269 original shareholders in 1973. Most of our business is land leasing and development, and the energy costs for our tenants, it's become very noticeable, and we have areas where we may have to increase rents where we pay the energy costs, and we have a kind of a sympathy wanting to lower rents for people who have to pay their own energy costs. And I have to agree with Mayor Marquardt's comments about not letting upgrading non-renewable projects getting lost, and not letting them get lost in the process in favor of renewable, because renewable projects have not been able to happen out here. We hope that they can. We hope that we can get some geothermal going like they are in Acatan. But the city's been trying awfully hard, so any help that we can get there.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming forward, Wendy, and not hearing or seeing any comments as well. Don, do you want to come forward, Don Graves?
Mr. Chair, my name is Don Graves. I am the production manager for UNICE here in Unalaska, and we're also a company that generates power, and that's hearing and just having started reading through some of this stuff, it's something that I would encourage you. I think we're a little bit different than a lot of other communities in the state in that as industry, before the city had really started to grow, we ended up having to generate our own power and ensure stable supplies for the plants. So in this process, I would encourage that you make sure that someone's available or maybe checks in with facilities like that on some of the programs here as well, in addition to the city or public entities. I know that the organization that I work for, we don't directly go into the government and start looking for some of this stuff. It's we do it from within. And I think when you have, in our case, it's the largest manufacturer of power here for the community, and we sell some power to the community, that it would be nice to get a little added assistance here with the facilities in town, and take a look at the alternative energy sources that are available through the production facilities, such as fish oil, and looking at how to expand on that. And to give an example, 25% of the power that UNICE produces is produced from fish oil, which is renewable. So in the drafts that I've looked at so far, that appears to be one of the things that you're really targeting. So I think broaden that out, not just from industry, but look at the potential for communities and say there's a lot of potential there for other areas, Accutan, Sandpoint, other areas up the chain that are involved with fisheries. So, and just for clarification, I think a lot of us on the list that you've got were thinking that it was a sign-up sheet on who was in the meeting, not necessarily to testify. So we're all caught a little bit off guard with this, and it's the first time that you guys, you know, as you mentioned earlier, that you've had a hearing out here. So most of us are pretty new to this.
Well, we appreciate that. And again, certainly written comments would be encouraged, but we also hope to have a lot of, or at least a fair amount of one-on-one time. And again, the bills, I'm sure many of you haven't seen them yet. The draft copy of the energy plan, you haven't seen that. So appreciate you coming forward, offering some impromptu remarks.
And very glad that all of you are here visiting and looking at this. So,
okay. Thanks, Don. Catherine McGlashan. Catherine.
Hello. Chair, my name is Catherine McGlashan, and I'm here representing myself as a single mother. And under HB 218 is your home energy conservation and weatherization program. And where I fall under this is my frustration as filling out the paperwork for weatherization and having five children in my home with no insulation in the home. So I think the process is really slow, and during the winter months, the cost of electricity and the cost of fuel is really difficult. And, you know, I'm not speaking just for myself, but other people in the community. And I would support that to implement it and assist it so the process doesn't take very long, not as long. I filled my application out last year. I've emailed, I've called, and I have no response. So something simple as insulating your home to cut the cost of your electric bill and fuel would help immensely. That's all I have.
So when I was here last August, I think it was, I noticed an ad on the local cable channel about an energy raider coming into the community. So you've had, have you, you haven't gotten to the stage yet where you...
I have had it rated. Uh-huh. My home falls under Aleutian Housing Authority. So I'm not sure if it's lost in their process. Like I said, I've called and I've emailed and I have no response. So I'm not sure.
I might maybe defer to the speaker here for a moment, but the legislature, as probably many of you are aware, recently overrode Governor Palin's rejection of the $28.6 million in recovery money. And originally there was a plan that the Alaska Energy Authority and Alaska Housing Finance Corporation had come forward with on how to spend that or allocate that $28.6 million. And part of that would have been to help sort of beef up the energy rating program, the education aspect of the benefits of weatherization, and really what we can do as consumers to conserve energy and save on our monthly costs. But Speaker Chenault, is there any update on what the governor might do with that money?
Certainly not yet. We've communicated with the governor and have asked him to utilize those funds not only in public building renewal, but also school districts, and that may be something John and him can look at. Certainly we think that the money should be used in programs that help Alaskans and not just necessarily help the state. So we don't know what the governor is going to use there, where he's going to put the money yet, but certainly I think we just got word from the Energy Department of Energy that that all the pieces of paper are in place now, and certainly that we can expect the money here pretty shortly. So I don't know the particulars of your case. Certainly with the Aleutians or with the state, they're somewhere in there, and I would just suggest that you contact your legislator.
I will do that. Thank you.
And ask him or his trusty staff to look into it, and I'm sure that they can probably have a little better luck. You may not get a different answer, but certainly the department will know that he's at least looking into it, and we want to see results. We don't want to hear excuses. We want to see results. You know, the original money was put in there to do just that, to you know, improve the energy efficiency of homes, and unfortunately there's things that get in the way, but certainly this shouldn't be a long time in coming and forcing you to expend more funds on energy consumption when you can do it on energy conservation.
Thank you, and I thank you guys for coming here to have your energy committee meeting here. I appreciate that very much.
Yes, and thank you for coming forward, Catherine, and I appreciate all the work you've done on behalf of the city down in Juneau. Sinclair Wilt? Okay, well, maybe we'll get a chance to talk with you after the meeting at some point. Just sort of randomly going down the list, Denise Rankin, are you here, Denise?
I am, but I didn't have
a... Okay. Well, I'm glad you could be here. Glad you could be here at the meeting. We might have to pick on somebody. We've got a bunch of names here, but we apologize if we weren't clear enough beforehand that we were hoping or encouraging people to come forward and offer any comments. And Dick Peck, the quiet Irishman.
Thank you, Bryce, and thank you, committee, for coming to the 10th largest city in the state of Alaska, Unalaska. And we definitely need some clear direction. I really enjoyed the comment that Clarice made. But before I go on to a few things...
Maybe, can I get you to identify yourself and your affiliation, please?
Yes, I'm Richard Peck, a 5.5-year citizen of Unalaska. I own my own energy consulting business, Utility Innovations Plus. I have so for 14 years. Have a 40-year career in the electric utility industry, starting in Homer, Alaska, in 1969. I have 20 years as a CEO of a general manager of Rural Electric Utilities. Again, I want to take off what was said by Charisse Millett. When some of the provisions came out for Alaska Housing Authority and some of the federal acceptance of some of the funds, I tried to, for some of my clients, find out general information. And believe me, it was easier to get information out of a chicken than from some of the different agencies that really didn't know how to, where to, and what was going to go on. I really appreciate Adam Berg's help and your help, Bryce, for identifying several different areas and people that could give me some answers. But I think I probably ran up $100 of the phone bills, and still by the time I got done, it was there was a lack of clarity on interest and programs. So definitely centralizing all the different agencies that have some effect or some impact on energy in general is most worthy. I'd also like to suggest one other area, and I would like to see maybe you consider the RCA to be put underneath this Department of Energy. And I'll tell you why. They are a major policymaker as far as energy for the state. And to consider, to not consider them under the Department of Energy, I think you're going to find yourself at conflict between RCA and what the Department of Energy is trying to do. And so I definitely encourage you to consider placing RCA within the Department of Energy. I think it's just good public policy. As a former cooperative manager that was regulated by a cooperative, by a regulatory commission in Wyoming, I don't think it's that difficult to do. So I really want you to take a look at it. I think it's most important. One of the things I would like to thank some of the people at Alaska Energy Authority. They have been very good. The wind assessment program, which I've just concluded, and I'll make copies available later on in a program of wind out in Pyramid Valley here in Alaska. And I really thank that group, James Jensen, that to the use of the wind assessment equipment free of charge to one of my clients was most appreciative, and is going to stay out here for another client that's going to put it on up. So I really thank you, and make sure that that programs like that are sustained as you go forward. One of the questions I have, and this is for you and all of you, under we already have a current board of directors under Alaska Energy Authority. I am concerned that what type of ideas and suggestions you're going to have for a new board, and what is the makeup, and what is the number of people that you will have for the Alaska Energy Authority, because that's going to be very key to the development of a policy, and I'd like to have some understanding what that is going to what's going to be recommended from this committee.
Well, I'll take the first stab at it. The concept is to give the Alaska Energy Authority the autonomy that it deserves, tackling the probably the most serious policy issue in all of Alaska. Because right now the Alaska Energy Authority, not too long ago, a year or so ago, they basically were they're structured in the same building off of 36 or off of Fireweed and Arctic in Anchorage. They have the same board of directors, they had the same sort of senior management team, they're in the same department, they were just sort of joined at the hip with Alaska, with the ADA, the Energy Authority, the public bank for the Department of Commerce. So the bill in front of you has been introduced. We had a cursory hearing on it last session in Juneau. We hope to go back, have more substantive hearings. In terms of the actual composition of the board of directors with Alaska Energy Authority, or how that might come about, we haven't gotten to that stage yet, and certainly that might be something that happens within that might happen. Actually, and it's been a while since I've looked at this mm-hmm. bill. We do have that laid out in the bill, and I apologize for that. We would have the Commissioner of Revenue, the new Commissioner of Energy, someone appointed by the governor, and two public members appointed by the governor, and that would be similar, I believe, to the ADA board right now in the composition. But again, this bill is just starting out. Any ideas you might have, Dick, or anyone else in the audience, we'd certainly appreciate hearing from you on that. And I do like your comment about the RCA, who held, I think they held a pretty important meeting this morning in Anchorage regarding the so-called rolling blackouts that that might occur in the natural gas part of South Central. But entertaining them as being part of the Department of Energy, I think that's a worthwhile suggestion.
Yeah. Just a quick comment, too, and it was kind of interesting, and I would hope that if we go forward, take a look at different sections, we'll keep this from happening. I have one client I represent on Umnak Island, Bering Pacific. And again, when I wrote and got the information on how to put the grant together, Alaska Energy was very positive, gave me all the information. Got down to the very end, and they said, sorry, your client is not eligible. And I said, why? Well, they're not an electric utility, and they're not an independent power producer. And I said, well, they could become an electric utility, but why go through all the filing process to become an electric utility when they're only going to serve themselves? So there are some areas of the state, really independent business climates, like Bering Pacific Cattle Ranch, that manages anywhere from 5,000 to 7,000 animals out there and puts together, probably anywhere from 15 to 20 employees at peak that really need help on developing their enterprise based on energy needs and wants. But they have no place to turn to at this point in time because of some of the definitions that are currently set up in Alaska law, and they definitely need to be looked at for individuals. And I know there's more Bering Pacific cattle ranches throughout the state of Alaska because of our uniqueness and rural segment, but definitely we don't want to disenfranchise any business interest that's trying to develop the resources of this great state, Bryce. Thank you.
Well, thank you for those comments. We did have the governor's brand new senior energy advisor, senior policy energy advisor, I think his title is, Senator Gene Theriault, at our working group meeting in Anchorage a couple of days ago. He doesn't actually start his new job until about the middle of September, he was telling us. And he's going to make every attempt to crisscross the state, just like we have with both the House Energy Committee and the Senate Energy Committee. But hopefully we'll try to get him out here. And, this community is very unique, not only in some of the opportunities, but also in the amount of energy that you consume, and being the 10th largest community and, one of the larger seafood ports in all of the United States. I think that that we should do our best to get him out here, as well as have the Parnell administration get better educated on the whole subject, which I think they're committed to doing so.
Thank you. If anything, I can answer any questions, I'd be more than happy to, and I look forward to all the details that will be coming out in the bill, especially 218. Thank you, Bryce.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Dick. Seeing any comments from any committee members. Representative Ramos, are you still online? Can you hear the testimony okay? Evidently, we don't have him online, but hopefully he can rejoin us. Jim Pollan? Okay. Frank Elty? Frank?
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and representatives. Welcome to Unalaska. I really appreciate the chairman. Hopefully it wasn't too much arm twisting, but to get you out to, we're not one of the major fishing ports, to the number one fishing port in the nation for the 20th year. But we welcome you here, and I hope you enjoy your visit to the community. Energy issues, I think, are one of the things that are in the forefront, as you've heard in some of your other hearings across the state. I think that it's something that forming a Department of Energy, if it could consolidate services and be more efficient to work with grant programs, weatherization programs, looking at renewables, other types of programs, I think it would be. I think that's something a majority of the people could support. Energy issues in western and southwest Alaska are incredibly important. I did a few phone calls today to check on the going rates of various heating fuel and where it's delivered in town, just for your information. The price of diesel number two at the dock, and that means at the dock is for where the fishing boats buy it, is $2.75. A year ago, it was $4.45 a gallon at this time of year. Delivered, home heating fuel delivered today is $3.18 a gallon. That's delivered to your home. A year ago, it was almost $5, $4.98 a gallon delivered to your home. Gasoline is $3.34 a gallon today here in Unalaska. A year ago, it was well over $4 a gallon. I believe it was $4.90 or something like that. I think it was $4.99, and they didn't want to make the last step to go to $5, so it was stuck at $4.99, if I recall. It might have been $3.99, but anyway, that just gives you a feeling of what the high cost of fuel is out here. But You know, some of the programs, like Councilmember McClashan mentioned about the weatherization programs. You know, we have a lot of buildings when you look around. We have a lot of residents that live in 65, 70-year-old buildings, some older than that. Many of them World War II structures that were left here by the military. And as having lived in those type of buildings for about 15 years on one of the companies that I worked for, we have screaming southeasterns here where you get 80, 90, 100 mile an hour of wind along with driving rainstorms. And, it, you know, you have a bucket brigade in your house trying to get the water while it soaks your living rooms and bedrooms. So programs that provide insulation and weatherization are very important. I think another aspect is the impacts of high energy costs to the seafood industry. You know, those costs are probably after cruise shares are the highest cost to the industry, and, you know, everything gets passed on. The seafood industry, the shore plants here, the high cost of energy is penciled in to the products they produce, and that has a tremendous impact to the harvesters and processors of this area. So Mr. Graves mentioned fish oil. Many of the plants, almost all the major groundfish plants here utilize fish oil in their equipment, in their boilers, and things like that. And I think programs that would encourage that and would on the state side and possibly tax relief or whatever type of programs. And I think there was some things like that in the past that that would encourage more use of that would be helpful. And I think with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll wrap up. Oh, I didn't identify myself. Frank Kelty, 38-year resident, speaking on behalf of myself.
Thank you, Frank. Any questions for Mr. Kelty? Well, Frank, thanks for coming forward and offering your comments. You have a long history with the community, as many of you do here in the audience. And, you know, if you would, being former mayor and certainly having a background with the seafood industry and so forth, but any suggestions on the statewide energy plan in terms of tie-in to the largest port and in the United States, and what the energy plan might do to recognize the seafood industry and its contribution.
Okay. Well, maybe there might be some more people from the industry that might speak.
Okay. Okay. Well, thanks.
Thank you,
Frank. I appreciate that. Chris Sledek, do you want to come forward, please? And
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity and thanks for coming to Unalaska. I guess a lot of things run through my mind when I think about energy in the state of Alaska, from the big picture to the small picture, but just to give you some comments, I think it would be important for the legislature to have someone independent of the Alaska Energy Authority to take a look at your projects that come forward for funding. I think that would be very important. I know in this last round of renewable energy, they had some independent economists work on the projects for you. And I would say that some of them you got some real good information on, and maybe some of them you didn't get as good information as you could have. And you really, I'd like to echo the mayor's comments, you need to have someone, an economist or an engineer, who is very familiar with power projects. They don't necessarily have to have renewable energy experience. They need to have power project experience. I think that's an important concept. The idea of taking AEA and putting them in a, making them back separate again, I know over the years they've had their own board, they've moved over here, they've moved over to the Department of DCRA when DCRA existed. I've watched this over 20 years. I think they need real clear direction from the governor and the legislature on what their mission is and what they're supposed to do. Because over the years they have, I know that there's been complaints about them competing with private enterprise. When they were had Lyman working for them, they did a lot of work that private enterprise did. So What is their mission? What is their authority? What is their spending authority? All those questions, I think, are very important to the legislature to have answered before you turn them loose. I think that's a real important thing. What's their level of authority for spending? So I think that would be very important, and I think they'd probably appreciate, too, understanding what their mission is. It's probably not a bad idea to have one-stop shopping for energy issues. RCA under the Department of Energy, I think, would be a good idea as well. But those are some of my major comments. Trying to get the price of fuel down. I know a comment I had on the energy policy. I think it's real important to have attainable goals in that energy policy. Someone should take what's the capacity of the state. If you're going to try to do renewables within a certain amount of time frame, and like say 50% of your energy is going to come from renewables, well, take the capacity you have in a state right now and multiply, take half of that and multiply it by 4,000 to 10,000 a kW, and you'll have an idea how much money you're going to need to spend to do that, because a lot of that renewable doesn't exist right now. So I think it's real important when you make those goals to not just go, this sounds good, but what is that going to cost, and are you guys going to buy into funding projects at that level? How are we going to come up with it? Or you know, bonding, et cetera, what's the money going to be available to make that happen? It's going to be real important. Those are some of my comments. I look forward to visiting with you folks over the next couple of days over these concepts of the Department of Energy and what you really want to get accomplished and what their ideas of this energy department are, the AEA, et cetera. Really appreciate you coming out, and we look forward to showing you some of our projects that we got going, our powerhouse project, and et cetera. We have 48 right now. It's estimated to cost $48 million. And that brings up another topic, which is, you know, we have four power plants in this town, and the cost of air quality permitting is going through the roof. If we end up at a federal level going to cap and trade, or every powerhouse in rural Alaska having to put SCRs on, et cetera, the costs are going to go through the roof. And they already are very expensive now, and the capital costs for installation of capacity is really expensive now, too. So that's something to be very aware of as we go forward with this cap and trade and some of these ideas. Just the conversion to ultra-low sulfur for fuel as well is going to have a huge impact on rural Alaska, too. So I appreciate the opportunity, and welcome to Alaska.
Thank you, Chris. Questions, committee members? Can you tell us a little bit about the McCushion Geothermal Project and
sure.
What that might be status-wise?
Sure. We have... The McCushion Geothermal Project started in 1982-83. They drilled a well over on the flanks of McCushion to about 1,800 feet, found 380-degree water, and modeled it. It's a 3-inch hole, modeled it to a million pounds of steam an hour. We had been in the process of negotiating with the landowner for the fluid, and that kind of fell apart. It's a private landowner that owns the property over there. And at this point, we have $4 million for exploratory drilling. That's not the only place on the island that it exists. We're going to be working with OC and the Aleut Corporation for some drill sites on their property. And as well, we'll be approaching the federal government for a drill site that's over in the Glacier River Valley. And we hope between those three landowners that we can get some sort of agreement for the fluid, because the fluid is not free. And the current landowner wanted to have a sliding scale for the fluid where it would cost just below what diesel would cost, and that's just not something you can spend $150 million on. And this will be a very expensive project. It's a very high-risk project. just developing the well fields could be well over $50 million. So there's a lot of risk to it. We're taking a cautious approach to it. I think we need to keep moving forward on the project. It's a minimum of a 10-year project. It will have to rely on bonding. And because of the high cost of the air quality permits that, you know, Alyeska has paid for, Westward Seafoods has paid for, the City of Unalaska has paid for, Unicy has paid for, everybody's really reluctant to throw those out the window and go with the geothermal if it may not work. So we have to take it to a certain point and prove it before they're going to give up their air quality permits, and they're getting more and more expensive all the time. So it's a complicated project, but I think with the volatility of the price of fuel, as we've seen in the last couple of years, you got to keep working on it because you have no idea what's going to happen in the future. We hope to drill next summer, and those will be exploratory wells. And the next step is developing the well fields, which is where you really start spending money.
How many miles are we talking about in terms of transmission lines?
It's 4 miles of water, and then where the current site is, it'd be about 8 miles, 4 bridges, and some pretty rough terrain to get across.
Mm-hmm. Well, while we have you on the hot seat, maybe we can talk a little bit about wind power, speaking of our renewable energy.
Sure. You know, we did some research into wind power. There's been actually 2 studies done, and there's at least what the initial findings were, that the wind has violent changes here. To put in a commercial level of wind power, you could spend $20 million, and I think at that time we'd save about $225,000 in fuel for a $20 million investment. You'd have $1 million in depreciation, plus I'm not real sure what the maintenance would be, but at the level of usable wind that we have here, it just didn't look like a good investment. Plus, with the level of winds that we get here, it was doubtful that any manufacturer would give us a warranty on an installation. So using public funds, that's really hard to spend that kind of money and might not be able to get a warranty for the, you know, manufacturer of the machine.
Yeah, it's real interesting. We had the opportunity, I think it was the latter part of February, to 25 below, stand on Banner Mountain in Nome and watch or get a quick sort of a presentation on what the wind turbines, 18 wind turbines with 100-foot towers, and all the turbines were situated so that they could capture the wind in whatever direction it would be blowing and so forth. And it was a $7 million project that both Quark and the Bering Straits Corporations actually funded themselves, because the Alaska Energy Authority said, you know, we don't think there's viable wind power in Nome. So, well, they decided to put the project up themselves, and they started construction in November, and they had it completed by the time we were there. And it was all tied into the city's demand, but also the Rock Creek mine that was nearby, the mine which by the time we'd arrived had been mothballed.
Mm-hmm.
But lo and behold, they did not apparently do as comprehensive or as thorough of a job of analyzing what the, you know, the best wind turbines or what the technology that might be the most applicable to, you know, far northern climate. And so one of the turbines, one of the towers broke, and they had to go back to this company in Canada, Integrity, whatever they're called, I can't remember the full name of it, but the whole system had to be shut down. But the point I'm trying to arrive at is that the wind technology, probably the most proven renewable energy technology that's out there, is still in its developing stage, and mm-hmm. I think it's going to be more ubiquitous, or more, you know, we're going to go to all the rural communities, for example, and see wind towers. I think that's just going to be a big part of the grids that are at the community level.
But in a long way, the point I was trying to arrive at is that with oil at $70 a barrel, and I'll ask any of the other legislators certainly to step in and correct me if I'm misstating things here, but I think future dollars for any type of energy projects are going to be very competitive. So the work that you're doing here at Unalaska in terms of working from the ground level up, being cautious and thorough and taking a real studied approach, I think probably will end up rewarding you down the road a ways, because the legislature, the $125 million that we did award in renewable energy projects, and Representative Millett just talked about it with House Bill 219, the legislature now finds itself saying, wait a second, if we're going to put major dollars towards renewable energy projects, and by the way, renewable isn't synonymous with cheaper, because sometimes renewable is more expensive, especially on the front end, and you amortize the costs out over a certain period of time, and you find out that it's even more expensive than, you know, good old diesel, despite the volatility at oil prices. But that the legislature is at a point now where allocating these scarce dollars is wanting to put the money towards projects that are actually going to provide cheaper energy prices and that are actually going to go towards technologies that work, not technologies that may work or that may, sort of involve a comprehensive feasibility study that may, you know, not lead to a project or may just, you know, really create a phase two or phase three, and they'll be back down in June looking for more money and so on and so forth. So I guess I would just say, and certainly ask for comments from any of the other members, but I appreciate the approach that the City of Unalaska is taking, because we have seen, I think, a lot of projects, and Mr. Speaker, I think you're aware of a number yourself as well, where, you know, people have sort of come in with a great idea and realizing that there's state money available, put the idea on the table, they've gone through the Alaska Energy Authority process, they've been awarded a couple million dollars, but that great idea may never ever come to fruition or may never ever, sort of materialize into what we all want, a more stable, cheaper source of energy for our communities.
Well, I think if you end up building the gas pipeline, that one of the byproducts is propane. If you could get propane to Tidewater for 70 cents a gallon and get it delivered, I mean, we could convert our power plant to propane. People can convert their snow machines to propane, our car, with information that's on the internet right now, if in the event the price of oil goes through the roof. I think at one time we did a very cursory review of the geothermal project. If it cost $150 million, in order for it to break even with no grants involved, the oil would have to be at $130 a barrel.
Well, as I look at the sign-up sheet, we don't have a lot of people sign up to testify, which is really unique. And most of the hearings we've had, we've generally had a long line of people, and we've been scrambling trying to accommodate everybody. So I would, I guess, just like to open it up, generally speaking, to anybody in the audience who wants to testify. And if not, I'm going to keep Chris on the hot seat here for just a second. But is there anybody else? Sinclair, did you want to come up after all? Well, Chris, we'll get plenty of time to talk with you. Certainly appreciate you coming forward, and we'll look forward to some of the tours here in the next couple of days.
Thanks.
Thanks, Chris.
I'm Sinclair Wilt, Vice President of Alyeska Seafoods, and I'm a reluctant public speaker, but just wanted to follow up a little bit on what Chris had to say about air permits. We have our own powerhouse, and we're currently in the process of trying to switch out one of our small generators, a 30-plus-year-old generator, with a new Tier 2 like-size generator for the purpose of conserving fuel. The new engine is supposed to save us 10 to 15% fuel over the engine that's being replaced. And if this proves out, then we have several more that we'd like to switch out. We've ordered the engine. It's certified Tier 2 by Caterpillar. Our hang-up is with our air permit. And the state of Alaska is saying it doesn't meet Tier 2 for this application, even though Caterpillar is certifying it. And it is approved in other states, including California, for this application. But our hang-up is with DEC and the air permit division. And we're rapidly coming to the point, decision point of refusing delivery on this engine and rebuilding the old engine. So we're trying to get to, replace old technology with newer engines that will conserve fuel for us. Became very apparent last year when our diesel prices ran up to $4.76 a gallon that we needed to try to conserve fuel, but now we're stymied by the state.
So if I could, just to ask you to elaborate a little bit, what's involved in the, I'll ask Chris's question offline about applying for one of these permits, and maybe just walk us, if you could, for just a minute or two through some of the steps involved.
Perhaps I can ask Greg Peters, our environmental compliance manager.
I can give you sort of a sketch of it.
Chris, can we have you come up to the mic since we're recording the meeting, and we'll have you re-identify yourself.
Chris Laddick, city manager. Having just gone through this process on our new powerhouse, which took, I believe, Dan, 4 years?
4 years.
Was it over $1 million or close to $1.1 million just to get the permit? You go in and you have to run a model. And you run an air quality model that's accepted by EPA, and you have all these inputs into it. What size of your engines, how much you're running them, et cetera. And then they also take into account that there's three other power plants in the community. And when they run this model, everyone's running at full bore, 24 hours a day. That's the simulation. And then you see where you get hits, NOx and SOx, nitrous oxide, sulfur dioxides, on the land where the sulfur, et cetera, would model these hits. And you have these assumptions, and you keep running these models, and you go and see the DEC, and they go, well, we want you to change this input a little bit and run it again, or we want you to change this. And every time you run this model, which is an expensive proposition to have a private firm run it, they change the permit. Well, we just want to see one more time what needs to be done, run one more model, change this assumption. And in the model, you don't really show what happens on your property, but everybody else's property shows up for these hits. So you get penalized for hits coming from your power plant. But it's just an amazing process. It seems to be a never-ending process. And the DEC commissioner is going to be here, by the way, so we can hit him up on this and on Friday. But it's just the cost. You have no control of the cost of an air quality permit. It's up to whoever the regulator is and how many times they want you to run the model. And it gets very expensive, and the model really doesn't have anything to do with the complex terrain or the winds, et cetera, that we have here.
So it's just essentially a federally driven process?
Mm-hmm. It is, and you have an air shed, and there's so much that is allowed in the air shed, and we have a fairly small air shed here for the community, but we have a lot of industrial use, so, Lord help us when we get to fishing boats, if that ever comes about with the EPA.
Well, we have about 35 minutes left, and I'll ask one more time for anyone to come. We'll just sort of open the mic up here for anyone who wants to testify on energy issues or sort of any other legislative issues. And do we have anybody online? Apparently we don't as well. Well, I'm going to do sort of the unusual step of asking the mayor to come back forward, if you would, Shirley. And I'd like to, in our remaining time, with your consent, of course, to maybe talk a little bit about, Mr. Kelty mentioned Unalaska, the largest port by volume, I guess, 20 years running now, and certainly the largest port, I think, in Alaska, probably in terms of value and volume and whatnot. But maybe talk a little bit about energy consumption and about, you know, I think we have at least a couple of legislators who are in Alaska for the first time, but they're going to see the huge amount of industrial activity that goes on in this community, the transportation sector, all the sort of facets of a major port, and it all requires energy, and a lot more energy than maybe a community with a stated population of you know, between 4,000 and 5,000 year-round residents.
Right.
But if we could maybe just have you address that, while we have a few minutes here.
Well, I'd be happy to, although you didn't tell me there was going to be a test. Thank you for bringing me back up, Representative Edgman. You're absolutely correct. There is no reason for the city of Unalaska to construct a $48 million power plant for 4,000 residents. Doesn't exist. What we do need to do is construct a power plant so we have energy needs for the number one fishing port in the United States in terms of quantity of fish landed. Our largest year, we were well over 900,000 pounds, or 900 million pounds, I'm sorry, of product crossing our dock, and that doesn't even count a lot of the fish that just comes within 3 miles of our water and gets put on a freighter and taken directly out. Being in a community like Unalaska is just so very different. When I came here 30 years ago, it was a very nice, quiet, small town, and it had Pan-Alaska Fisheries on one side, and it had the old Vita and Unicy on the other side. The bridge had just been built, and we had, of course, the Elbow Room. I think it's been there since the world began. And we had the bank, and we had a small store. And, of course, Pan-Alaska had their own power generation. Unicy had their own power generation. And something happened in 1988-89 called Pollock and the Magnuson-Stevens Act. And all of a sudden, we had a fishery that was enormous, the largest fishery that anyone in the state had ever seen, certainly. And it was all situated completely around our community. And Unalaska is really geographically blessed, being where we are out in the Bering Sea in the North Pacific. We're right in the middle and just so close to some of the richest fishing grounds on the planet. And we have the only deep water ice-free port in the Aleutians and in this area. So we were a natural fit, not only for the vessels that catch their product and freeze it out at sea and bring it in as just a frozen, rough product, but also for the plants here who changed from a quiet town with plants that did crab and salmon to all of a sudden these really huge plants that started pulling in pollock. When that happened, this whole community really changed, and it was not only the plants themselves, but support sector services, homes, people moving in here, starting businesses, just really started converging on Unalaska. And in a very short of time, we grew very, very quickly. And as we grew, so did our power needs. And you've seen our World War II era power plant. And there's not a whole lot you can do with a building that has walls that are 5 foot thick. So when it came time, we realized, actually it was, I think, about 8 years ago when Mr. Laddick first came on as city manager, and he'd only been here maybe a month. It might have even been at his first council meeting, and he told council, you are way behind the ball when it comes to power production, and we need to start now to start for you to be able to provide the power that you're going to be able to need for industry, whether it's the fishing industry, the transportation industry, the communities here. We've got to start, and I'm awfully glad that we took his advice and started that long ago, because it took us this long to get to this point with this, you know, very complicated, complex powerhouse. But what the city's trying to do now is provide a power source to the community and to our industry, both current industry and future industries that have an interest in coming to Unalaska, the most dependable, fuel-efficient, and clean power that we can. And we ended up going to Finland for what Wärtsilä engines that the council chose to pick. And they're kind of the green standard in Europe. And they're just a really heavy-built, slower-turning machine that actually, unlike a cat, which likes to run at maybe 80, 85%, it likes to run higher than that at 100% and doesn't get torn down every 6 months. You know, it's a year, year and a half. They're just extremely dependable and extremely efficient. We were very lucky to get some assistance from Senator Stevens at that time, and he got us a grant, and we purchased the two engines. It's 5.2 megawatts each. So we're going to replace eventually nine very inefficient older cats with two, and actually now three. We have to order the third one, which is interesting. We haven't even built the plant yet, and we've had to order a third engine for it simply because of the power needs in this community. So between American President Lines, Horizon Lines, the new cold storage, coastal transportation, cold storage at the FTS building, just all of the different businesses here, our power needs are tremendous. And every time the price of power goes up, it goes across the board to the consumer, goes to the ratepayer, it goes to everybody. And, of course, you've heard this all before. It costs a lot of money to live in rural Alaska. But a lot of people choose to do so because there are a lot of benefits that outweigh the negatives. At least we think so. That's why we're still here. So our intent is certainly to see how technologies evolve for renewable resources and to really we've pretty much put our eggs in the geothermal basket. And as Mr. Laddick said, it's a risky basket. However, if we can get information and analysis that shows us that it will pencil out and at least provide our base power of what used to be 8 megawatts, which would probably be closer to 10 now, megawatts, we would still need our diesels for the up and down swings where we could go up to 20 megawatts of needed power during the different busy times of the year, which is, you know, 3 or 4 months here and then 3 or 4 months there. We have very few breaks between the busy times. So we're always going to need diesel generation. We're not going to get away from that. Always going to have those fixed costs, so we're always going to have to apply those to the rate as well as what it's going to cost to put in geothermal. So you can see this is going to be an incredibly expensive venture for us if the council so chooses to go that direction, if it's feasible, if they believe it's feasible. And when that happens, we're going to need help. And it comes back to an earlier question, which would be, you know, how much help can one community get? We're a community of 4,000 people, but we provide the support, the absolutely critical support for a fishing industry that supports the entire state with tax revenue directly to the state's coffers, which we, of course, get some back, but 50% of it stays within the state. We provide funding for 63 villages, coastal villages, in western Alaska through the CDQ program. You know, this community, people think Unalaska and our port is just for Unalaska. It's not. We are a statewide influence, very positive statewide influence, and we're going to need help to be able to continue to support that industry in the future, whether we move forward with geothermal or whether we stay with a high cost continuing to upgrade and to expand our powerhouse. So.
Representative Millett.
Yeah, Trevor, I think you brought up a good point, and that's something that
we've been traveling out, that Trevor is not unique in the part where they're going to always need diesel. We've been to other places around the state that don't have the opportunity to have a renewable energy source. And so the 50% renewable, although we talk about it, and it was the former governor's goal, it's something, you're right, it's good to have a goal, but a goal doesn't fit every community. There's communities that are much like you, and I understand, and my family, part of my family lives in rural Alaska, that we're always going to be a diesel fossil fuel state. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to, because you don't have the opportunity to have alternative energy, you're right, we don't want to negate what you have and what you need as far as upgrades to your diesel and diesel Wardzilla, which we saw in Nome, which Nome has the same power plant that you'll be having. I'm very understanding of your concerns about when you see something like this come out and it says that we'll attain a 50% renewable goal and the opportunity may not be here in Dutch Harbor, but you have a ICE report and you can always get diesel, which is very fortunate for you because there's a lot of our communities inside Interior Alaska that don't have that opportunity. So I think the plan does need to recognize the uniqueness of all the regions. And I think that's the benefit that we're getting here traveling around the state is finding out that the plan is going to have to be, you know, regional by base. Thanks for those comments.
Thank you.
To hear that.
Thank you for yours.
And just to follow up on the idea of putting a statewide plan together, the whole notion is to at least create some kind of an overarching vision in mm-hmm. state statutes, some kind of a meaningful language that addresses both the supply side, which is very important, but also, as we heard from someone earlier, certainly the demand side as well, conservation and weatherization and those programs that can help individuals here in the near term. But with the few minutes that you've had a chance to look at our draft bill in terms of a statewide energy plan, any comments on you know, the contribution that a plan could make for a community like Unalaska?
Mm-hmm. You know, I need some more time. There's a lot in that plan. There's quite a bit. It seems like it's like a bouillabaisse. There's a lot going on in there. Mm-hmm. But if it's done right, it is delicious.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like some more time to really look at it, to understand it more. And I guess my only comment would be just a cautionary one. In such a large and plan that's so complex, with such a complex state, with so many different regions and needs and possibilities, that it becomes really easy to, you know, get scope creep and try to you just want to do so much in this plan that eventually it just collapses under its own weight and does very little, over engineering a good solid strategy to the point where it becomes unworkable for different regions. And just in first blush, when I look at it, it just seems like an awful lot trying to be accomplished there. And sometimes this is just me. The simpler things are, the better I understand them. That's just how I work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that work pretty well before in other forms of government, whether it's local government or different boards and commissions that I've served on in the state in the last few years. And it always seems to start out really large and then boils back down to, you know, what's the real essence of what you're trying to do and what part of these plans really get you to that point, and then stop.
Mm-hmm.
Let that work. And, you know, years down the road or a time down the road, you can say, you know, this was a good idea. It did work. We can build off this. Let's add to it. But it's much easier to do that than it is to take something out. But I'll definitely be looking at it over the next few days so that we can talk about that. Cause again, I really appreciate that you've come here to hear these comments, and it wasn't, you know, so much you coming here to tell us what you want to do. You didn't come here and say, here's what we're going to do for you. You came and you said, you need to let us know what's important to you, what you think of these bills, what you think of these ideas, and, you know, just tell us of what's critical to you, your business or your community, and I really appreciate that.
Well, we really appreciate your time and comments or questions from committee members. Well, we have the mayor, Representative Tuck.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I really appreciate what was discussed today. You know, conservation can only go so far, but we know that conservation also, you know, it's cheaper to save than it is to produce another kilowatt. But when you have expanding industries like you do here in Dutch Harbor, you can only conserve so much, so you got to plan for that. And I really appreciate the comments about wind energy also. Wind has its purpose, but wind isn't necessarily the solution, and it's not a solution for everyone. When we had those high prices of fuel, I can see why a lot of communities were looking towards wind as a supplement to be able to help out. But I really appreciate you guys looking into that and knowing not only the rate of return that you're going to get on that, but what are the maintenance costs and what is the depreciation value of wind. I think that's when wind, you know, is only specific to certain situations, because it does not, again, solve all the problems. I know in Dillingham it was discussed about, you know, what about buying an old Navy ship or a Navy submarine and have that nuclear power right there at your port, where you can, because the refrigeration, I can imagine what the refrigeration needs must be in this community. I really appreciate everybody's comments, letting us know really what your situation is and how you've looked into these different avenues, geothermal and so on and so forth, to help try to solve those problems. It really helps me a lot to get a better perspective and help solve some of the solutions for your community. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you very much, Representative Tuck.
Comments, questions? Representative Johansson?
Mr. Chairman, just very briefly.
Thanks, everybody, for showing up. I would encourage the mayor, as the leader of the community, to continue down the road of looking towards the geothermal, work with the major industries here using the fish things that you're doing with the fish oil. I imagine you have an amazing amount of refuse because it's such a big activity here in the area. There's lots of different options, and I think we all realize, as the co-chair to my left said, in some places, you know, diesel is going to have to be part of the solution. But I encourage you to keep working on those other alternative things that you're working on, because eventually you're going to have to use them, I think, at some point. And so I'm glad you're looking down that road. Keep doing it, because 20 years from now, you know, if you started 20 years ago, you might have something right now. I'd hate to come back here in 20 years and everybody say, God, I wish we would have started it back in 2009. So I'm glad you're working on it, and please continue.
Thank you, Representative Jones.
And before we turn the mic over to our speaker, who we're very privileged to have here, and he's he's happy to be here, and and likes certainly adding to the discussion. Representative Johansson is the majority leader in the House, so just so you know that we have two of our sort of our senior leadership people in the House of Representatives here at the table, and. Representative Chenault, any sort of comments? Because I think we're sort of moving into the closing comment section, unless there's anybody who wants to testify, and we don't have anybody online looking at the staff in the back of the room. So,
and certainly, I am happy to be here. I have some friendships that I've built up over a number of years, not only here but in Juneau, and it is good to come to other communities. It's one of the issues that when the Energy Department, or whenever we started the Energy Committee, that I've always felt that legislators don't get out into communities in the state as much as they should. Certainly Bryce is in rural Alaska more than any of the rest of us other than Kyle down in Ketchikan. But certainly I think it does all of us good. You know, I live in a rail belt. I have natural gas, but half of the people that live in my community aren't on natural gas. They still burn diesel fuel, where they burn propanes. And so, you know, the energy issues in each community are different, and when it does come to energy, I think that it behooves the legislature to go out into rural Alaska and other areas of Alaska and make sure that we really see what's going on. You know, Reggie Jewell, a good friend of mine, he can tell me what it's like in some of the smaller villages, and they can even draw me pictures. But until I actually go there and see, I don't get a real clear picture of it. And I think it changes the perspective of urban legislators and rural legislators combined. So, you know, that's one of the issues that I've promoted or tried to promote, is simply the legislature needs to get out into Alaska and see what Alaskan's like. And so I've always had a good time down here with the city council and the mayor and the manager and Dawn and Kathleen and you know, so it's good for us to be here, and we appreciate the hospitality that the community shows, and I like the feedback that I get on not only energy issues but schools, your bridge. You know, other areas where we can see, actually get the opportunity to see the money that we've expended over, I've been in Juneau for 10 years, the money that we've expended, we actually get to see a completed project. And that's what I like to see, is completed projects, not projects that are still growing or we're still talking about it, but we're still spending money. I like to see things completed. So, and I think you've got a good record of that, and, you know, I just appreciate the opportunity to come down and visit. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Speaker Chenault, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, this is your fourth time in the community, is that right?
I think I'm batting 4 out of 7, I think. I don't know if that's good or bad. In baseball, I'd be doing real well.
Well, we do have one more individual want to testify. Skip, did you want to come forward, please, and identify yourself and your affiliation for the record? we do have the room till 7, which is about 13 or 14 minutes, so we'll certainly be done by 7. And thank you for coming forward.
The one issue that I wanted to address was last year we had the $1,200 that came out for everybody for energy. And it was great. I think it was really good. But if that should come up again, because we're seeing the cost of oil rising gradually, they just announced that our reserves are short, so we know it's going to go up some more. If you venture into that, is there any way, instead of giving money, that you could give an energy credit? It's not so much for us here in Unalaska, but in the rest of the state, where fuel can run to $9 a gallon, if you could utilize an energy credit, they wouldn't have to pay taxes on it. And for communities like Bethel, when they just got, where they were hit hard with cold temperatures last year, if they had that fuel instead of the money, I just think that the state could get more bang for its buck by giving everyone the energy credit rather than the money. And that's, if you run into that situation, I just wanted to say that I feel that that might be more beneficial to the entire state.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Skip. Appreciate the comments. continuing around the table, sort of in a wrap-up fashion, Representative Ramirez, we'll try one more time. Are you online at this point? And if so, any sort of last-minute comments? Not hearing any. Co-chair Miller, did you want
Hello?
To?
Hello? Hello?
Yes, Representative Ramirez, we've got about 10 minutes left to conclude the committee hearing, but just wanted to offer you a chance maybe to offer any comments as we approach 7 o'clock.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I couldn't get the mute off my BlackBerry. I'm delighted to hear the testimony, and as you and the co-chair and the committee go around the state, the message is largely the same. You know, depending on the severity of the price of various hydrocarbons last year, it's not as bad as it was last year, but it's still terribly impossible. Capital from the state is limited. Capital within the various communities we visited is constrained. And the future is perilous for all of us, given that the price of oil is going up. And I am delighted with the draft bill that the committee and stakeholder group are working on, and I think it will point the ship of state in the right direction, but there are miles to go, and I look forward to a very engaging conversation here as we reconvene in January to grapple with the very serious issue that face communities in a unique way and face all of us collectively in an equally perilous fashion, trying to spread meager resources across many, many, many communities, all facing variations on the same dire circumstances. So I applaud you for going to Unalaska, and I wish I was in the room with you.
Thank you, Representative Ramirez. We certainly appreciate you tracking the meeting by way of telephone. So with that, Co-Chair Millett, did you want to offer some closing comments?
Sure. Thank you guys so much for coming out. I appreciate it on a Friday evening. I know there's a seafood feed afterwards, and I'm really excited about it. But just know that the Energy Committee, we have one of the most active committees in the legislature, and every one of the people that I sit with on this committee are really engaged and really working hard towards some ultimate solutions and working towards some strategies on energy plan, energy policy. But like I said before, we're no energy experts. We are just all citizen legislators that come from different fields of work, and you guys are the experts, and we depend very much on your input and engaging you into this dialogue and getting a work product that will work statewide. So I can't tell you how much I appreciate the time and the effort. Your mayor has been great. Your city manager has been great. We've talked to them. They've been to our offices. We are grasping the things and the issues that you deal with on a day-to-day basis here in Unalaska, and it's not missed. So just want to point out that they do work hard for you and appreciate your hospitality, and I am very excited to come and see the new industrial developments around Dutch Harbor and get reacquainted with the area, and look forward to talking to you all in the next couple of days. So thank you.
With that, before we draw the meeting to conclusion, I'd like to just take a second and introduce Jeff Turner, who works with Representative Millett, and along with my staff, Adam Berg, who a number of you have met over the years. They really are the ones that they get the work done for us. And when you get the opportunity to maybe get business cards from some of the legislators around the table, and certainly our office as well, we all have toll-free numbers, and we would encourage you to call and you know, really feel like you're part of the process, because all three of the bills that we have in front of us really in some ways are kind of just the tip of the iceberg. There's just a whole other range of energy policy issues that are major, and some are not as major, but everything from the rail belt task force to certainly the gas line, we've heard about that. There's going to be discussion next session on major projects. So sitting, I'm sure, the wind farm at Fire Island, a number of hydro projects that Representative Johansson is very familiar with, and just a whole array of energy issues that I think are really going to be a, you know, really just sort of a major part of the upcoming 90-day session. We will certainly be in contact with the governor's senior energy advisor, Senator Terrio. And he did stop by the office a couple of days ago in Anchorage and asked that we certainly keep him in the loop on some of our meetings around the state, and we'll urge him to come down here as well. And Tim and Jake in the back for bringing hundreds and hundreds of pounds of sound equipment down on Alaska. Everything that that we have talked about today will go back into sort of the committee record. It'll be transcribed. You can go on the legislative site, the acronym is BASIS. Ask Adam or Jeff for more information on it if you want, but you could read the transcription, the written transcription of this meeting later on down the road when it gets transcribed. With that, everyone, thank you for coming by tonight. We look forward to certainly this evening as well as tomorrow, and for some of us who are staying over for the weekend, having an opportunity to talk with you, to get to know more about everything to do with energy, but also with Unalaska in general. So with that, we will adjourn the meeting at 6:55, and thank you all for coming tonight.